Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hold hands and close your eyes. It's 12:30, and you're listening to the Ghost Story Guys.
Welcome to the Ghost Story Guys. I'm Brennan Storr.
I'm Ian Gibbs.
And this is the show where we talk about spooks, specters, and all the other things watching from the shadows beyond the campfire. Some conversations only make sense after the sun has set, and this is most definitely one. Thanks for tuning in. This is episode number 90, and we're coming to you from that tiny mountain cabin you dream about, but can never quite reach. How you doing, Ian?
I'm doing well, Brennan. How are you doing?
Well, quite frankly, I can't believe we're at episode 90.
90. Wait till we break 100.
I know. It is getting ever closer. And I'm really excited to get into tonight's collection of listener stories, because we've got such a wide breadth today. We've got some fun stuff, and then right at the end, we've got some very not fun stuff. In fact, some kind of scary, creepy stuff. It's a very particular image.
Okay.
Yeah, it's actually the image which we have named the show after.
Okay.
And yeah, it's spooky, so I'm looking forward to getting there.
Well, I haven't read ahead this week, so I'm looking forward to it as well.
Oh, sweet. Well, you'll be experiencing it for the first time.
I will.
I think you'll enjoy it.
Excellent.
Before we get there, though, I actually had my own story of scaring someone totally by accident.
Oh, your face again.
My face was hidden this time, so no.
Oh, wow.
Although that may have been part of the problem.
Masks scare everybody.
Yeah, masks and sunglasses plus big tattooed guy.
Okay, yeah, you did not do that well then.
So what happened was I was checking the Ghost Story Guy's mailbox, which is in a UPS store downtown.
Right.
And on my way in, I noticed there was this woman talking to apparently herself.
Okay.
And as I passed them, I realized, oh, no, she's talking to her child on the other side of this gigantic hedge that they have next to the UPS store. And the kid was distressed about something, and the mother seemed to be annoyed about the fact that he was distressed.
Right.
So I went inside, checked the mail, came back out. And of course, when I'm downtown, I wear a mask. So I've got my mask on. I've got my big sunglasses on, my flat cap. So my face is completely obscured. Again, I've just got a skull t-shirt, my tattooed arms, and the grim look on my face, if you could see me. So I walk back out, and the kid is really kind of head up. And I see the mother's over there, and I hear a flapping. And I heard the mother say, well, I think it's caught. I think it's caught on this string. And the little kid was really upset about this. So I kind of peeked around the corner and I see this tiny bird trying to fly away and it can't.
Right.
It's hooked on something.
Right.
So I start walking away and I just can't. I cannot walk away and not do anything.
So you went back and you crushed its little skull.
That's right.
There you go.
Like Steven Seagal.
There you go, kid. It's fixed now.
Welcome to the real world. No, I keep an X-Acto knife, a box cutter in the car.
Oh, not creepy. Sure.
Well, I just keep it there in case I have to open stuff, usually mail.
Okay.
But I thought, all right, well, I got a knife in the car. So I walk back to the car. I grab the box cutter and I put it in my pocket and I walk back to the hedge. And so the mother and her child, they're there and they're looking at this bird, which is now playing dead. It's this tiny little bird laying on a cloth in her hand. With this string kind of maybe like hooked to its leg.
Right.
And this thing is hardcore playing dead, just hoping maybe these assholes will go away. And so I said to the woman, I said, it looks like it's caught. I said, I think I can help. And of course I pull out a box cutter. Well, let me tell you, when you, with your face entirely obscured, pull a box cutter on a woman and her child behind a hedge, there's some unspoken things that happen, we'll say. And so immediately, alarm. So I took off my sunglasses, so at least you can see my eyes.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a madman, mostly. You know, I'm pretty harmless. So, but I just said, well, it's for the string. And they kind of relaxed a little bit. So I crept forward, just cut the string. And as soon as I did, that bird was fucking gone. Like, yeah, it just, like a bat out of hell, it disappeared.
It was out of there.
It was done. Yeah. And the mother just looked at me, and I looked at her, and I nodded, and I put the box cutter back in my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Put my sunglasses back on, like, just backed away very slowly so as not to alarm them. Because I was a little bit concerned they were going to fly away like the fucking bird.
Most likely.
And I swear to God, that's a story they're going to be telling now. You know, I tried to explain, well, you know, I kind of keep it in the, but it just, there was no.
Yeah, that's what you tell the police, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
I keep it in the car for mail. Yeah, mail. That's it.
And the mag light, well, that's for hitting people, you know?
Yeah, and the rope, in case someone needs a tow.
That's right.
You got all your stories worked out.
See, you understand me. But anyways, yeah, so that's sort of my, yeah, that's how I terrified someone completely by accident, while trying to be helpful. But yes, so on this episode, we will not be talking about box cutter wielding madmen with inferiority complexes. No, instead, we will be talking about some fantastic listener stories, and we'll have all of those coming up right after this break. Welcome back. As we said before the break, this episode is going to be a collection of listener stories, ending in a particularly unsettling one that I don't like it.
Yeah,
in the same breath. But before we get there, we have a couple pieces of listener mail that we wanted to share following on from the last episode.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're sort of short little stories that tie into the topic we talked about last episode, which is doppelgangers. And I remember telling you after I cut that episode together, and I think I do this after every episode comes out, I'll say, it's fine. It's fine. You know, it takes a lot to scare me now.
Yeah, I agree. And it's funny you say that, because I often forget that when I'm doing the ghost walks.
They're actually scary. It's just that you have kind of developed a thick skin.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So when people are like actively afraid, I'm like, oh, are you okay? What's wrong?
Wimp, come on.
It's just another Thursday night for me, sweetie.
That's right. Yeah, I thought they were solid stories, but we had really great feedback from that show. And a lot of people saying it was our scariest episode so far. And
oh, wow, really?
Yeah. So, hey, I'm certainly not going to complain about that. But
nope,
we did get two doppelganger stories from listeners. And so we thought, before we get to the main sort of like the meat of today's show, we just wanted to share these doppelganger stories since, again, it's still fresh in our minds from episode 89. And the first one comes from Maynardo. And he says, I just listened to your last podcast and want to share what my mother lived. My little brother and I are 16 years apart. At the start of my mother's pregnancy, the doctor thought she would have twins. They thought they could hear two heartbeats, but a couple doctor visits later, all they could hear was one heartbeat. No big deal. Well, a couple weeks after he was born, my mother and the nanny are sitting in his room, my mother holding my brother, rocking him to sleep. Then they both see what appeared to be a little baby arm move in the blankets of the crib, like reach up and then back down. My mom says she froze and looked over at the nanny, who looked scared. The nanny asked, do you see a baby in the crib? They slowly got up and my mom checked while the nanny stood back holding my brother. Nothing in the crib. A couple other times small things like that happened. Hearing his voice from a room he wasn't in, him as a baby acting like he was talking to an unseen person, and so forth. As he got older, it stopped, but we all remember his twin. Right?
No.
Phantom baby. I'm not into it, man.
No. Not okay.
Weirdly, and this is a great example of how Italian my family is. Now, I may be remembering this wrong, so I'm sure my family will correct me if I am, because it also doesn't reflect on my grandparents or my great-grandparents in great light. But I recall being told that my maternal grandmother, she had a twin in utero, but the twin died.
Right.
And supposedly, if I remember correctly, she was always treated badly by the family because of this. Almost like it was her fault the twin died.
No.
Yeah. And wow. I don't know what is so great about this twin in utero. Like, did the thing send fucking letters? that were super cool. And then when it didn't make it out, they were really bummed because the lame twin was born. I don't understand.
You know, your sister had her real estate license before she was born.
That's right.
She was. What do you bring to the table? Shit in your pants?
You can't even get into your safety school. Yeah. So that's as Italian grudge holding to the nth degree.
No kidding. That's bizarre.
Makes no sense.
All right. And we have another story.
Yes.
This one is from Bill. Hello, gentlemen. My name is Bill, and I live in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I'm currently listening to episode 89 and have a story that I think would have fit in nicely. Sometime around 1996 or so, I was over at a friend's house here in Sioux Falls. He, his wife, and I were in his basement where their living room was located. They ran a shop upstairs selling pottery and crafts. We all knew and expected that the house had been haunted. Mostly normal stuff as far as I know, footsteps and such. I should say that I've been sensitive to these things from as far back as I can remember, and I felt the presence of an older couple that had lived there at some point. However, this night was different. My friend went to use the bathroom that was located upstairs, and his wife and I stayed watching TV. After a few minutes, I heard him walking through the house and back down the stairs. I turned my head around and saw him walking down the stairs, but I could only see his legs. Then, when he should have walked around the furnace, he didn't. I looked to my side toward it, and he peeked his head around the furnace and gave me the finger-to-the-mouth gesture of, shh. I admit that I love seeing people get scared, so I was waiting for him to jump out and scare the hell out of his wife. An important detail is that he was only about 4 feet away from me, so I saw him as clearly as anything. As I waited, a few minutes went by, and when I finally turned again to see what he was doing, he walked down the stairs as if nothing happened. I don't remember if I freaked out at the moment, but we've talked about it numerous times, and it still gets to me.
And that is creepy as hell. You know, we had a message from a patron who suggested, I think it's called the block time theory, this idea that all time is kind of happening at once simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they posited that this would explain some doppelganger stuff because you're actually just seeing yourself do something
at
a different point in time. And while I think you could maybe write some things off that way, I feel like this particular thing, that doesn't fly.
No, it really doesn't.
Because this goddamn thing, it pulled the whole, you know, literal nightmare fuel thing, which is not on.
No, it's not cool. At all.
So, Bill, I thank you for sending that in, man. But yeah. I'm kind of terrified.
And he's right. It would have been a perfect addition to the show.
It sure would have. So, I mean, now we have it.
Now it is.
And we are now finished talking about episode 89, Doppelganger Country. And it is time for this episode, which is, of course, creatures with covered faces.
That's as creepy as hell, too. This next story is from Sarah. Hey guys, longtime listener. You guys have kept me company through some serious shit in my life. I appreciate you. Oh, thanks, Sarah. So here's my super lame story. It is 1000% not worth talking about, except possibly as comic relief. Oh, come on, Sarah, don't put yourself down. Anyway, I lived in a house for 12 years that was built in the 40s. The kind of neighborhood where people lived all their lives and their neighbors all know everything. I was the second owner. The first owner was also a woman named Sarah, and I'm good friends with the neighbor across the street who knew her for many, many years. She passed away in the house, and I always felt a sort of affinity for her. I knew that she knew I loved her little house, a G.I. Bill bungalow, as much as she did, and I always felt like she was around. Let me be clear, there was no evidence of this, just a feeling. When I first moved in, there was an old dishwasher that used to turn itself on and run randomly. I chalked that up to wiring. Several years later, I did a big home renovation and bought a new dishwasher, among other things. I'd moved out for the renovation, and imagine my surprise when I moved back into my essentially brand new house with new wiring and appliances, and my new Bosch dishwasher is also turning itself on and running randomly. I joked with people about the helpful poltergeist. Here's the crazy part. I recently moved in with my new husband and sold that house. He bought his house brand new, had it built, in fact, before I met him. The first week after I moved in, we were in the kitchen one night when we heard a familiar musical tone. It was the tone the dishwasher makes when it's turned on. Neither of us was anywhere near it. "It's never done that before," he said. "It's continued to do that since, as well as run itself. I don't know what to make of it, but it doesn't feel very menacing."
I mean, I will say one thing dishwashers do is they break down. I mean, they do that almost as much as they clean dishes, I think, if we're looking at like the cumulative numbers.
Yeah, yeah. Their pumps go, I think, or they get clogged up or something.
Yeah, the one in our apartment just gets clogged, and it doesn't matter how little soap we could use. I could use a homeopathic amount of soap. I could pretend to throw soap in there.
Yeah.
And it just gets clogged. And then whenever we have to call the super and have, well, back there used to be a guy who did it. Now it's a woman. She's great.
Yeah.
But the dude, Les, he was useless because he would come in and say, "Oh, you clogged it again. You're using too much soap." Like, oh, Jesus, man.
Yeah.
All I got to do is say soap around this fucking thing.
That's funny. Our dishwasher in 3 years never broken down. So.
Well, isn't that nice for you? Of course, your internet just melted down and we spent 45 minutes trying to fix it. So I feel like that balances.
I think that's more of a TELUS problem and less of my problem, but okay.
I'm still going to blame you.
You tell yourself whatever you need to.
I shall do. That's how I live my life.
You shitty dishwasher.
And Sarah, thank you for sending that story. And, you know, I'm glad you did because it's nice having something that's light and fun. And I know we had... Or rather, I should say, in my book, A Strange Little Place.
Oh, God. We are never going to escape that, are we?
Available on Amazon, ACX, and Audible.
Oh, God.
Use your Audible credits. I still get paid. But I had a story about gremlins.
Okay.
And this idea that there's tiny little shadow creatures who will mess with your electronics and electrical. Right. And I believe there, you know, that was one of the things they had issues with was dishwashers. You know, just these... Again, it seemed to like go with the person as opposed to being that's why I brought it up. It had nothing to do with dishwashers. It had everything to do with going with a person.
Right.
And although this doesn't sound malign in any way or malignant in any way, it is interesting that it followed her.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be worried or anything.
No, fine. Don't be freaked out by a ghost that's now officially haunting you.
No, it's cool. It's cool. Just don't ever come visit, all right? But really, though, thank you so much, Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
This story comes from Bryce. All of my stories come from the same northeastern New Brunswick community. This is where my family is originally from, and all of my stories have to do with my grandparents' house. This house is directly along the bay where it is wide open to the water, with no shelter to the wind. It is about 15 miles from where my entire ancestry landed from Ireland long ago. My first experience in this house happened on Easter, when I was young. Me and my sister usually have a specific room that we stay in when we stay at Grammy and Grampy's, but, us being the hooligans that we are, we decided to switch rooms for the night because why not? Around 3 in the morning, I suddenly woke from a deep sleep. When I opened my eyes and looked at the doorway, I saw a shadow figure. It was darker than the darkness in the room but had little distinct features. At first, I thought it was my mind messing with me, so I rubbed my eyes, and when I looked again, it was still there but had shifted a bit. It just seemed to stare. Me being the little naive kid that I was, I thought it was the Easter Bunny. Oh, you blessed ignorant soul. Coming in to check on me so I wasn't afraid. Then, as suddenly as I had awakened, the figure was gone, and I decided that he had moved on to the next house. I closed my eyes and went to bed. The next morning at breakfast, I told my parents about the experience and how I had seen the Easter Bunny. They looked at me as if I had four eyes, but also seemed frightened themselves. Looking back, it was definitely not the Easter Bunny that I had seen that night. My next story comes from a recent Christmas, which was the first time since my grandfather's passing that the whole family had been able to come together. We were all opening the last of our gifts after supper when my sister pulled out a gift for my mother from my dad. He had bribed my sister to wrap all of my mother's gifts that year, and for a laugh, she decided to wrap that gift in as many layers as she could. As my mother unwrapped it, I got a feeling in my gut that something wasn't right. As she neared the final layer, we could see it was a newspaper. She pulled it gently off, as she isn't the kind of person that tears wrapping paper, and set it beside her. As she did, something drew me to the newspaper. I had a weird gut feeling about it, but couldn't figure out why. I picked it up and it was the obituary column from exactly the same date as my grandfather's death. I was shocked to find it and showed my mother quietly. She looked at me, smiled, and said, "He's always with us." It was probably the first time that I felt truly at peace with his passing. My next story comes from my grandmother in the same house. Her mother had died not a mile down the road at the young age of 21. She passed suddenly one morning while making sandwiches for her husband, who was set to go fishing. My grandmother was just 1.5 at the time and has no real memory of her biological mother, just pictures and stories from her father. One night while she was pregnant with the first of her 4 children, quite far into the pregnancy and very nervous about it, she was tossing and turning. She claims that at best she was getting 4 hours of sleep a night. She says that one night during the best sleep she'd been having in months, she awoke suddenly, and in her doorway was a figure. The figure resembled her mother exactly as if she were still alive. She slowly walked towards her bedside and muttered my grandmother's name. My grandmother nodded her head, and the figure said, "Everything is going to be okay. It will all work out." Then the ghost turned around and walked out the doorway. It wasn't 2 weeks later that my uncle was born. First off, thank you so much for sharing that with us, Bryce. That's especially that last one. That's really touching.
Yeah, it is. It's really sweet.
And I know I keep saying this, but we do actually still have that episode prep, which is going to be an entire episode of stories along those lines.
Nice.
And again, we haven't pulled the trigger on that because it's going to be, a real tearjerker.
I know. I hate weeping.
Human emotion is so gross.
Ugh. I'm so unsavory.
No, I do not like it. I'm kind of fascinated with stories where, like, a spirit walks in and walks out, you know, because it's something that we don't, I mean, you're theoretically dead, right? You don't need to do that.
Right.
You know, you can kind of just zoop in and zoop out as you please. And I just wonder why that is, you know, if it's like a courtesy thing so we don't crap our pants when they turn up.
Or maybe it's just because that's how we move. Like, we just know only one way to move.
Maybe, yeah, that's
maybe
a good point.
It's the super enlightened spirits that can hover and drift and all those cool moves.
Oh, good. So you're saying Bryce's great grandmother is shackled to the earth. That's great, Ian. That's a nice way to thank our listeners for sending in stories.
Sorry about your shackled grandmother.
Oh, God.
Maybe as far as they go, they learn what it is to live in the spirit.
I see, right.
They can get better at manipulating their own movements.
Right. I tell you, as soon as I go, I am flying around like Superman.
Uh-huh. And, to where?
Never mind.
Yeah.
I don't think we need to dwell on this.
No, I think we all know where you're going to go.
These prurient thoughts you have about hanging out in the locker room when you're invisible. No, I'm offended by this. Offended.
Offended, I say. I said good day.
So, yeah. Again, thank you so much for sharing that with us, Bryce.
Absolutely.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Our next story comes from David. I'm writing to share this story. It isn't very scary, you'll see why, but it has changed the way I see every day of my life. One morning in February, I dropped my kids off at daycare and went to stop the bank machine to get money for my babysitter later that day. It was approximately 7:15 a.m. and around 0 degrees Fahrenheit, minus 17 for the rest of the world, and blindingly bright. I live at a high altitude where winter mornings are painfully cold, dry, and bright. As I walked back to my car, I noticed a man I immediately recognized standing across the street. He was the owner of a local business, a friend of mine's ex-husband, and a known drunk. He was freaking out, waving his arms, moving his mouth like he was shouting, and very much trying to get my attention. I was shocked. I stood for a moment watching him and assessing the situation. While it was blindingly bright out, there was no activity on the streets. I was alone. He was acting erratic and I decided he must be drunk. Ultimately, I decided that engaging him was not a safe choice and that I would call the police to check on him once I was safely locked in my office. I drove the 2 blocks to my office, made some coffee, and went across the street to discuss the situation with a trusted friend. I was nervous, both about his level of drunkenness, the cold, and my decision not to try and help. But calling the police in the United States isn't always the safest choice for the person you're concerned about. As I told my friend what had happened and what I was thinking, she began shaking her head. She said it couldn't have been him you saw. I pushed back and told her that I was 100% certain. She began typing furiously and then turned her computer screen around to show me an obituary and told me I was mistaken because that man had died the week before in another country. I sat stunned, playing the encounter over in my mind. There were pieces that were odd. I couldn't hear him at all, even though he appeared to be yelling, and sound travels quickly and easily in the thin, cold air. I couldn't see his breath, although I could see mine so clearly. He never tried to approach me or come closer, although it was clear he was desperate to talk to me. It was as if his legs were rooted to the spot, and most strangely, he was dressed in shorts and a t-shirt like it was summer. I turned this encounter over in my head from time to time. It was during a time in my life where I had two small children under 5 and was working full-time running a law office. I was exhausted on a level I didn't realize was possible. I'm ashamed I wasn't more compassionate to him. Alive or dead, he was suffering, and I simply walked away. Not that I know what I could have done for him, but I feel like that wasn't the reaction I was supposed to have. That man and I were not close. I'm not even sure how he would have recognized me. But I was the person who could see him, and maybe I had a role to play in that scenario. And now I look around me and wonder if some of the people I think I see are not there. He didn't look like a ghost. He was a completely solid being.
Oh, there's something about that. There's something so like crystalline clear about that, you know?
I agree completely. And it was something that this guy really didn't want to deal with.
No, which is fair enough. I mean, I think that's the hard thing, right? Like, the stuff kind of seems to happen, or at least the stuff seems to pick its spots really badly.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, it doesn't happen when you're feeling solid and you're like, all right, bring it on. It seems to happen when you're just not in a place to deal with it.
Yeah.
It reminds me of this time I almost got into a fight because this guy was being rude to a clerk in 7-Eleven, and I just couldn't deal with it. But I was so sick, I could barely stand. And so if this guy had taken a swing at me, I would have probably fallen before he even made contact.
Right.
I was in 7-Eleven, and this guy was giving supreme shit to the person behind the counter for no good reason. He was just being an asshole. I said, hey, buddy, give the guy a break. And he turns around. He says, you mind your own fucking business. There's this teenager standing behind me in line. So I look at the kid. I said, can you believe it? He's that old, and that's the best he can come up with. And then me and the kids started laughing at him. He just shut up and stormed out.
Right.
But again, if he decided to take a swing at me, I was so, so useless at that point. He would have punched my head like through the window. And it occurred to me that, yeah, you know, the times that I've been like challenged physically are never when I'm on top of my game and thinking, yeah, I can do this. Even right. though I was still, right. you know, it wouldn't go real well because I haven't been in a fight since I was like 12. But still, you know, the times where I've thought, oh, maybe I can handle myself are never when that shit happens. It's always, again, when I'm barely mobile.
Yeah.
And completely incapacitated. Like I got into a screaming match with a guy at baseball once where I could barely walk when my back was so tight. And here I am like hunched over shouting at him, calling him a mama's boy from across the field. Like it's real mature stuff is what
it is.
Very
mature.
Yeah. You know, going back to David's story, I'm just fascinated by this idea, though, that this person is trying to make contact.
Mm-hmm.
Because that must be so confusing.
Do you think it was because David was so tired that his defenses were down? Because I know when I was doing a lot of songwriting, the best songs would come kind of 11 p.m., midnight, 1 a.m. because yep. I was almost without any kind of barrier, any kind of defense. And yep. then it I would mean, just that,
that's
flow.
When I, that's when I do my best work for the show.
Right.
Is at night. You yeah. know, but it's interesting, though, because at the same time, I find that I have to be careful past those points. Because if I'm dealing with certain topics, it can almost be overwhelming. And I wonder gotcha. If that's why.
Yeah.
Because your resistance is low.
Well, and yeah, maybe just more open at that point. And so if he was at a point of exhaustion, maybe that's why it happened.
Maybe.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me, too, of a dream I had once. Long, long time ago. And I was living in Revelstoke at the time, but in the dream I was in downtown Revelstoke and I saw this guy crossing the street And I kind of waved to him, and because I knew him from the store, from where the store my family ran. He was a customer. So I waved to him, and he waved back at me. And I remember thinking, geez, he looks good. You know, this guy was, he'd always been like a big, 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 hefty dude. Very right. nice man. Very, very nice man. But big, big, hefty guy, big beard. And when I saw him in the dream, he was down the road he, in town, he was very slim, you know, and I thought, holy shit, he looks great. And I, you know, woke up and I didn't think too much about it, although I thought it was odd the dream stuck with me.
Right.
And then I was having a chat with my mother at work, and I mentioned this dream, and she goes, well, that's funny. I mean, you know, remember he died last month.
Oh.
And I'd completely forgotten about that.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So again, I mean, it's not the same because I was very much dreaming, but you know, you do kind of wonder, is that just, am I randomly remembering this person who died for some completely unknown reason, or did I somehow cross paths with someone somewhere out there in the dark?
Interesting.
Yeah. These are the tough questions.
And we don't have any answers.
No.
If you came here for answers, boy, are you going to be disappointed.
The ghost story guys, boy, are you going to be disappointed. This story comes from Sam. Growing up, my family lived in Wolf Creek, a community that is just outside Edson, Alberta. The house we lived in wasn't particularly old, and it never had a history. But as a kid, I always felt that there was something that lingered in the woods, and at times an off feeling in the house, though it seemed like activity would happen whenever I was in a low place emotionally. I was laying in bed, struggling to fall asleep, so I lay there with my eyes open, allowing them to adjust to the darkness that was my bedroom. Gradually, though, my vision made out a black silhouette of a man in my doorway. It was tall, and while it had no distinct detail or even really a face, I could make out that he was wearing a fedora and a coat. I didn't know what to do, so I just laid there and watched as his shadow man paced around my doorframe and paused every so often. I didn't feel in danger, but my mind knew that this thing shouldn't be there. I shut my eyes, hoping it'd go away on its own, only to open them and see that he was still there. I'd try this trick a few more times before just keeping them shut, not bothering to check, and I'd eventually fall asleep. The fedora man, as I like to call him, would visit me on and off for a little while, always pacing or watching me as I laid in bed. I used to see shadow people frequently, as one time I saw two having a silent conversation in my room, and with a blink, they'd be gone. I'd have these experiences from the ages of 11 to 12, though as I've gotten older, I haven't seen them as vividly or as frequently as I have. I'm 21 now, and sometimes the fedora man still crosses my mind, and often I find it eerie that so many other people have seen this figure. And I'm right there with you, Sam. The hat man, as I think he's commonly called, is,
right,
is
a yeah.
pretty frightening figure, because generally these are not happy encounters.
I had never heard of the hat man until we started doing this show.
Really?
Yeah. No, seriously.
Actually, in fairness, until I had my own shadow people encounter, I'd never even heard of shadow people.
Well, there you go.
It wasn't until I Googled, you know, shadows in the shape of a person that I saw all this literature and I thought, oh, shit. Okay, well, this is a thing.
Isn't that the way, though? You're like, oh, this is a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. And I guess in some ways it's reassuring because then, okay, well, I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
But then it raises all the other questions, such as, well, what the fuck is this thing?
Right. I totally get it.
I think it's interesting, too, that we sort of are seeing, again, this kind of unexpected thread because, you know, we just had two stories of shadow people who would not disappear no matter how much they tried to close their eyes.
Mm-hmm. And, we always get those weird threads in these shows.
Yeah, I'm always fascinated when that happens.
Yeah. Our next story comes from Bree. I've been wanting to tell my experience for a little while now, but I've been too frightened to. I've had experiences since I was a teenager, and I'm not the only one in my family. We've been very open about the paranormal and accept the fact that it's just something that happens. When I was 12, I moved into a house with my family and everything seemed normal until one night I woke up and found a lady in white sitting on my bed. I remember hiding in my blankets and forcing myself to sleep. In the morning, I shrugged it off and went on with my life. 4 years later, when I was 16, I went through a tough time. I broke up with my boyfriend and we moved across the country. The night I broke up with my boyfriend, I looked out the window and I saw the lady again. She was a long figure in a long white dress, but I couldn't see her legs. I was scared and moved from her sight and then called my mom to come home. Well, the experience didn't end. The lady in white, as I called her, started showing up all the time. She appeared in the dark and would stay outside watching me wherever I was out there. I feel like I should mention that I'm absolutely terrified of the dark. Not because I can't see anything, but because I'm afraid of what is out there. I mention this because I feel that this ghost has made my nighttime experience worse. The next year, we moved back to my home state of Pennsylvania, and the ghost went away for a little while. I only saw her on certain nights. In 2016, I moved out with my boyfriend and his friends, and the activity heightened. I was stressed out a lot and started seeing the lady in white all the time. Every time I went outside to smoke, she would be there and just watch me. And then one night, she did something she'd never done before. She moved. I looked down at my phone, and when I looked up again, she'd moved a little closer. I was so freaked out that I hurried back inside, but when I told my boyfriend, he kind of shrugged it off as he doesn't really believe in the paranormal. Another one of those. Another experience took place in 2017 when I went on a cruise in Mexico. One night on the cruise, I had a horrible dream about the ghost and woke up to her watching me. I froze in fear and then turned over and went to bed. In 2018, we moved into another apartment complex and the ghost followed me. We have multiple parking lots outside my building and she will stand at the end just watching me. Sometimes she'll move closer. I don't know why she follows me around and what she actually wants.
So thank you for that, Bree. And again, that's three stories in a row now where we've got this connection to someone feeling stressed or crappy.
Mm-hmm.
And then seeing these things.
And I mean, don't they feed on fear?
I mean, we've certainly speculated that. I don't know if all of them necessarily feed on fear, but, you know, I would say like the negative ones. So that seems to be the case.
I don't know. It's weird.
It really is. I'm not quite sure what to make of that one because the woman in white is such an archetypal ghost thing, you know?
Yeah.
Almost to the point where, I mean, when we hear about women in white stories, you know, in like famously haunted places, you and I both kind of roll our eyes.
Well, it's a bit like the Phantom Hitchhiker.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, we were even talking about this in regard to the golf course here.
Right.
Because
yes.
It has its own lady in white story. And yeah. You deliberately left it out of your book because, you know, it's been done to death.
It's been overdone. Yeah.
Yeah. And yet, you know, people still say, well, where's the lady in white story? But again, just it's been done so much. What's the point?
It's lost its meaning in some ways.
Yeah. But this is very like this particular story is so atypical because it's so much more involved.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of it at the edges of your perception or just, you know, one or two parking lots away. I mean, again, that's horror movie level stuff.
Oh, 100%. And it's a bit like that Doctor Who thing where the stone angels that can only come closer when you look away.
Oh, God. Yeah. You know, it's the one Doctor Who reference I understand and it scares the piss out of me every time.
It's the only one I remember.
Yeah. No, same here. I think it's literally all I've seen. I think I saw those episodes. I think it's a two-part. Oh, pardon me. And The Silence. I also saw The Silence.
Okay.
That's the one where you forget. They're aliens in suits. They look like Men in Black.
Oh.
But you forget about them as soon as you turn away from them.
Right, right, right.
Kind of like the new Independence Day movie. As soon as it's over, it just vacates your head.
I totally don't remember that movie.
Exactly. This story comes from Nicole. My family, on my mom's side, are sensitive. Her aunt Nita was psychic, as was her great-grandmother. Unfortunately, as a good Christian woman, her great-grandmother believed that she was evil and cursed. She never embraced her gift, but Nita did. She did past life readings, had precognitive visions just like her mom, and used hypnotism/meditation to help people quit smoking and overeating and things like that. My mom has always been sensitive as well, and our connection is super strong. When I was a kid, mom ran a daycare from our house. We stored dry goods and snacks in the basement since the kitchen was so tiny. And one day she asked me to go down and get some potato chips. I came up with Cheetos, and she said, oh good, I meant to ask for Cheetos instead of chips. To which I replied, I know, I read your mind, and skipped off to play. In the early part of the 2000s, I worked with a theater company in downtown Omaha, Nebraska. Super cool, super creepy, super haunted building. There was a little girl who ran around and scared people. My mom saw her leaning out of one of the observation windows in the upstairs tech booth, laughing. Mom swore she looked like me when I was a kid. I used to feel her pulling on my clothes, and I'm pretty sure she whispered her name to me. Tara. I saw a shadow person there once also when I was locking up. I had turned off all the lights and was getting ready to set the alarm when I remembered something I left in the kitchen/green room area. I turned around to go grab it, and there was a solid black figure standing in the doorway to the kitchen. To this day, I cannot remember what I went back for because I turned tail and booked it out of there, barely stopping to turn on the alarm. That you even turned on the alarm makes you stronger than me. My favorite story from the theater, though, was the radio. We were all on the stage building a set, and the station we were listening to was playing a bunch of crap. We kept complaining to each other, but no one wanted to go up to the booth to change the station. Quite unexpectedly, the radio was thrown into static, and it sounded like someone was flipping through stations. A couple seconds later, it landed on a classical station. We all stared at each other. There were four of us in the building, and all of us were on the stage. We said, "Thank you," and went back to work. I got married pretty young, got pregnant and thought I was in love, and it was okay for a few years. Not long after our second child was born, things got a little rocky. We were so young and dumb, and it never really got better. Around that time, my maternal grandfather died. About a year after that, the fighting ramped up in our house. One night, I stormed out of the house and stood crying on the front steps. I stood there wondering what I was going to do, how I could leave with no real job or anywhere to go, when a gentle breeze stirred the tree above me, and I felt a warm arm around my shoulder. I didn't hear a voice or anything, but I had an overwhelming sense of comfort and love. I know in my heart it was my grandpa being there for me, and I was able to calm down and go back in the house. It would take another 6 years for me to leave, but I can still feel that warmth and love to this day. I have one more story. It isn't mine, and I wasn't there, but it is too cool not to share. My Uncle Dave had been in terrible health for a few years. Last year, while working a few hundred miles away from home, he collapsed on the job site. He was life-flighted back to Omaha, where they were sure he wouldn't make it through the night. He had huge blood clots in his lungs and was fading fast. At one point, his children and wife were in the room and he started to code. Lights flashed, doctors and nurses rushed in and tried to get him stable, but his face was turning gray and he wasn't breathing. My cousin said you could see the life leaving him. In the middle of all that, a little old man stepped into the room and asked if the family minded if he prayed for my uncle. No one had a lot of energy to give to him, so someone said, "Yes, that's fine," and turned their attention back to the bed. The man stood there and prayed quietly. Quite suddenly, my uncle started breathing again. His heart, which had slipped into arrhythmia, leveled out, the machines stopped beeping, and he slipped into a deep sleep. Everyone was stunned. The doctors and nurses had no idea what had happened. Someone suddenly remembered the little old man, but he was nowhere to be found. They searched the hall and checked all the rooms on that floor, but there were no patients, visitors, or staff who fit that description.
Pretty crazy.
Really is. And it reminds me, we did a story like that on the haunted healthcare episode, except it was a little bit the other way.
Remember, okay.
Remember the guy walked in the hospital, walked in the ward, was completely unknown to all the staff there. He kind of looked like he was from the 70s.
Yes. Yes. And I do remember that.
It was almost like he was deaf. And this is kind of like his antithesis, which is fascinating.
That is fascinating. And yay for your uncle.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm so he's all right.
Yeah, no, that's awesome.
I just wanted to say thanks for sharing the grandfather story too, because that was really beautiful.
Yes.
As someone who is closer to my grandfather than I was my father, that really hits home for me.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a good thing. And it's a great way of finding some comfort too in that.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I want to say too, I mean, congratulations on leaving. I mean, not that you need our congratulations on that, but I know that can be hard.
Mm-hmm.
Especially mm-hmm. when you have things to lose and you have responsibilities. And
absolutely.
Yeah. Just a reminder to anyone out there who might be in a situation that they think they can't leave.
Yeah.
You can't. There are ways. It maybe won't be easy. You know, and obviously in cases where there's the possibility of domestic violence, I mean, that's a whole other beast and we're not going to even try and address that here. That's not. But yeah. Just a reminder. Because I've been in that situation, you know, not to that degree. I never had kids. Thank God.
How are Nathaniel and Kiki going to feel when they hear that? That's not cool.
I'll give you a candy bar if you don't tell them.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I knew you.
Oh, yeah. No, wait, I'm on keto. You got to give me a pack of bacon or something.
Since you bring up Nathaniel and Kiki, my ghost children, Nicole actually asked about where they came from.
Yes.
And so let me just address that really quickly. It's a story full of shame, Nicole, is what it is. So the whole story began, and I don't know what episode it was. I tried to find it once, and I had no luck. If anyone out there knows, please message me. So here in Victoria, there is an arcade I quite like hanging out in and playing pinball, or at least I did before the world stopped.
Mm-hmm.
It's still there, but it's only open if you, like, you can book 2-hour blocks, but I don't have the $350 kicking around.
Right, yeah.
But anyways, when it was open, I would go there and kill 10 bucks on the pinball machines. Well, one day I was expecting a phone call. I can't remember exactly what it was for. I think it might have been from a cell provider or something. I was hammering out a billing issue. And I was in there playing pinball, and my phone rang. Great.
I just love this story.
Oh, I know. I can feel the glee in your voice.
Yeah, I really do.
Bastard. So anyway, so I my phone rings, and I plug in my headset, and I answer the phone, but the operator can't hear me. There's just too much noise. And so I step outside, and I said, "Oh, sorry about that. I'm outside now." And the operator said, "Oh, well, where were you, if you don't mind me asking?" And I said, "Oh, I said I was in a video arcade." And they said, "Oh, did you bring your kids there?" And I just panicked. And I said, "Yes." And I lied, because I couldn't bring myself to admit that, no, I'm just a grown man who in the middle of the day will go play $10 worth of, like, narc or pinball.
But then it got worse.
Oh, yes, it got worse, because the operator
The person
said,
was then worried that you couldn't see your kids if you walked too far away, and you went, "It's okay, I can see them through the window."
Yeah.
Oh my God. That is when I came up with their names. I don't know where I pulled them from, but that is where your phantom children came from.
Yeah.
Nathaniel, I just got to name them. So
it's no weirder than the way they were, I guess, conceived is probably the right word. But yeah, so that Nicole, I received a call from an operator. I could not acknowledge the fact that I, a grown man, was playing pinball in the middle of the day. So I lied and said I had kids.
Yeah.
And then I had to follow up that lie by saying, "Oh no, don't worry, I can still see them through the window." And I made the mistake of telling every single person I know, because I am dumb.
Rachel. So I've dealt with plenty of ghostly encounters in my 19 years, but the absolute worst experience I've ever had happened when I was 16. It was around 12. My mom was asleep. She'd been put on a new migraine medication, and it knocked her out cold. I was listening to music and just relaxing when my dog wandered out of my room. I already had had encounters in the house, someone grabbing me, seeing figures from the corner of my eye, so I just opened the door to let him out so he could get water. After I closed the door and went back to scrolling, I heard heavy steps, and JP, my dog, started growling. He was a super sweet dog, so it scared me really badly. I locked the door and could hear what sounded like steel-toed boots walk down my hallway. JP stopped growling, and I couldn't hear the footsteps because I'd left my music on in case it was an actual intruder, so they thought I hadn't heard them. I sat in my closet crying and trying to get my phone to call 911. The calls wouldn't go through, and I resorted to calling my grandma, who lived two houses down. The police came into my house through the window, had me stay hidden in my closet, and woke my mom up abruptly. Once I was allowed to leave my closet, I went into my living room. All of the furniture had been moved in front of the side and front door. The police said there was no signs of anyone even attempting to enter the house, and at that point, I sat down and had a panic attack in front of everyone. The police reassured me that they weren't upset that they'd had to come out, and left. Shortly after that, we moved in with my great-grandma, as she had health problems and couldn't be left alone. After the move, my mom explained that she'd also seen things, but didn't want to scare me. Every member of my family had experienced something, along with my ex-boyfriend. To this day, I don't know what I heard, but I don't plan on ever finding out.
So thank you for sharing that with us, Rachel. And what's really interesting there, and it was a little unclear, is if the furniture had been moved by the police?
I don't think so, because they said they came in through her window.
Right, of course.
Right? So I'm thinking no.
So that's fucking bizarre.
Yes, I agree.
Because that means something was in there, and not only was it in there, it moved things. And that is strange. I don't know that I've necessarily heard anything to that level before.
It is disturbing and upsetting.
Yes. Yes, it is all of those things. There is a story I've told before. I think I last told it on the First Responders episode, but it was from a police officer from Surrey, who responded to a call in an apartment. And when he got there, this woman was outside, and she was freaking out. It might even have been a house. I can't remember. It's been several years since I heard the story. what happened was, as she explained it to him, was that she was by home by herself. Her husband was out working. And she put the baby to bed in the crib and left the room. And when she came back, the crib and the baby were fine. Baby was asleep. But the rug that the crib had been sitting on was rolled up against the far wall of the room.
Okay.
That rug was not rolled up when she went in there the first time.
Oh, creepy.
So you've got this very heavy wooden crib on top of this rug. And I guess the reason they had the rug is because it was a hardwood floor.
Right.
And so they didn't want the crib scraping the floor.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Again, rug is there. She leaves, walks back in 10 minutes later. The rug is rolled up against the wall. No sound whatsoever.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
Yeah. It just doesn't make any sense. And again, it's not quite poltergeist activity. It's not quite anything. It's just like
just weird.
Yeah. Just nonsensical physical movement.
Yeah. No, I don't like that.
And the fact that the dog reacted to, I think.
Yes. Is and I know what she means about I had a super sweet dog and I only ever heard her growl at one particular dog who was her nemesis. I don't know what the deal was with that, but it was the only dog she ever growled at. And otherwise she'd never, ever would have growled ever. When that happens, you pay attention, right?
Yeah. And actually just going back to the story, there's one more thing that interested me. In light of, again, the massive technical problems we had earlier tonight.
Oh, lordy.
I trying to get my phone to call 911, the calls wouldn't go through.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And I mean, is it just that 911 was busy? You know, right. Was 911, as Flava Flav said, a joke in your town? Thank you. I was listening to Fear of a Black Planet last night, so it's fresh in my mind.
I'm so pleased for you.
This story is from Ryan. Ryan says, "This story was requested by Brennan on Instagram from a picture he posted at the Rivet building in Victoria. I did indeed, and I'll explain that after the story." Ryan goes on to say, "Now to give a little background, I have seen, felt, and heard things that have no reasonable explanation since I was about 7. I moved to Victoria, BC in 2009 from Vancouver. I knew one person and had never really been to Victoria. It's important to note that I knew almost nothing of the ghosts and layout of streets and alleys here. The first week I lived in Victoria, I just hung out with my friend and her friends exploring my new area. So one of the nights we found ourselves exploring the Bastion Square area of downtown in the fading light of day. There were 4 of us in total, and we decided to smoke a joint at the entrance to Helm Canal under the arches. I was facing south, looking down the alley in our little circle. As we were talking and laughing, I saw something short and black running full speed across the far end of the alley. Now again, I didn't know the layout of the area, so I didn't really think much about it. Just assumed it was some kid running through a cross alley. We finished our joints and decided to walk towards that far end. Now I know listeners might be thinking, what the hell are you doing? You just saw a dark humanoid shape run across the alley. Well, I figured it was just a kid or a short person, and I realized that where I saw this dark shape, there was a connecting alley, but it does not go through, it just connects on the left side and does not continue on the right. So that meant that whatever I saw would have run right into the Rivet building, but through the walls. It gave me the chills. I asked if anyone else had seen the figure, but no one else had seen what I saw. It wasn't until about 2 years ago that I went on a ghost walk, which are awesome, thanks Ian, and heard the story of a boy who had drowned in the well located inside the building. This story is probably one of my lighter, not scary experiences, but it was still unsettling at the time. And yeah, thanks for sharing that, Ryan. I do a lot of night photography, which I post on my Instagram, which is Truth. And yeah, recently I took a picture through the glass at the front of the Rivet building.
Right.
A historical, for our listeners who don't know, it's a historical building in downtown Victoria.
One of the first, actually built in 1860.
Well, oh, there you go.
You're welcome.
I was actually hoping you would weigh in on this one because this is very much your area of expertise. And I know very little about that area. But so Ryan said there is a story about a kid in a well.
Yes.
Would you mind elaborating on that for a little?
Sure. In the Rivet building, for years, they didn't know anything was amiss. Until in the 1980s, they dug up the foundations of the building inside and outside just to make sure they were still okay. Because those buildings around there, except for the one on the end, they were all built in the 1860s. The one on the end wasn't built until the 1920s, mostly because Helm Canal was still used as a major thoroughfare to get from the old part of Victoria to the quote-unquote new part. the well was discovered when they ripped up the floors and they found this original well. And after doing some digging, they discovered they discovered that the well was indeed Victoria's very first well. And the architect was thrilled and he's like, oh, I'm going to make this the centerpiece of my new lobby, which he did. And they made kind of a cheesy 1980s shopping mall looking water feature that never actually worked very well, apparently. But what it did do was it sort of released a ghost. And the story around the well is the reason it got boarded up and forgotten in the first place was one of the prospectors had dropped his tea kettle down there. He was trying to get it back. He couldn't. He was too big. Little boy walked past, 7 or 8 years old, believed to be First Nations. And the boy offered to go down, be lowered down on a rope and grab this guy's tea kettle. And it was 1860. So, you know, they tied a rope around the kid and sent him on down. They tied a knot in the rope and the kids stood on the knot and held the rope and the prospector and his buddies began to lower him down.
That's not better.
No. But about halfway down, the kid had a change of heart and said, please bring me up. So they did. And they started to bring him up. And the well, it wasn't like a storybook well. It was like basically a hole in the ground with some rocks and mud around the edges just to, you know, shore it up a bit. And it wasn't used to that kind of weight. And so one of the rocks tumbled down into the well, hit the kid. He let go of the rope. He fell to the bottom. He died. They did get his body out, but nobody wanted to use that well afterwards, right? Like, no one wants a nice piping hot cup of dead boy tea.
People are soft, Ian.
Oh, right.
Modern people are soft.
Modern people are soft. So they ended up boarding it up, and it remained boarded up and forgotten for, you know, 120 years. But when they opened it up, they sort of let the boy out. And people started to talk about seeing a young boy darting around the lobby out of the corner of their eye. And he doesn't look sad. He doesn't look upset. If anything, he looks relieved and kind of playful and happy to be running around. So, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So where you took your picture, you took it through the front door, right?
Yeah. I put the phone right up to the glass.
Yeah. And if you just moved over a little bit to the right, you would have seen the well at the very back of the lobby off to the right.
I think you can actually see it in the image. I
image. I didn't see the well, but then I don't really care about the well anymore.
Oh, I wonder if maybe I was thinking of something because it kind of looked like the broken water feature thing.
Okay. Yeah, that's it.
Okay. So yeah, I think I'm pretty sure it's right at the back there.
Oh, cool. Okay.
What's interesting is a lot of people have commented on that image and about there being something dark at the back of it.
There you go. And that's where he would have been.
These are kind of not all people are people who listen to the show. Some are people who just, you know, kind of cruising through on hashtags.
Wait, there's people who don't listen to our show.
I know, it's hard to believe. Taking the world by storm.
That's literally one listener a day. Yeah.
That's right. Literally tens of people.
Tens and dozens of people listen to this show. Don't you know who I am?
Fives and fives. Yeah, I say that every time I go to McDonald's.
I say when I go to Red Lobster, don't you know who I am?
Yeah, and you keep that up. You're not going to be able to go to any of them. They've got your picture up in like five already.
Shut up. Quit telling people that.
Before we move on, I'm going to make a really slutty plug. And that is, I have opened up a Redbubble store to sell prints of some of my night photos.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I'm going to be adding more over the coming weeks. But I think I've got like 8 or 9 designs up there now. So you can find that at largelythetruth.redbubble.com.
Martha sends in this next story. So I'm not from a family who senses this kind of stuff. We never talked about this. It's just like it didn't exist. Slowly as I got older, I started sensing people near me. When I was about 20-ish, I thought I would see a dark figure in a wide hat and cape out of the corner of my eye. Or sometimes he would dart quickly in a flash from one side of the room to the other. I hadn't thought about him in years until you brought up the same figure on one of your shows. I was totally shocked. A little bit more about me is that I have a mild form of synesthesia. I didn't know what it was for probably 20 years. But in situations where there were heightened feelings, when things were extra happy or extra sad, I would see colors in my mind's eye that had to do with those feelings. I didn't think anything of it. I thought everyone did it. Eventually, I began to see very thin but bright rings of light around people, but only in very particular circumstances. Usually at a church service, but sometimes just out on a walk or a drive. One day, I decided to tell my then 13-year-old daughter about the light I was seeing. She seemed to breathe a sigh of relief that I was seeing things too. It turns out she has synesthesia as well, but it's much more pronounced. She sees color when she hears music. She sees people's voices as color, and even shapes or patterns, again, all in her mind, and knows when someone is lying because her color turns yellow. We call it her superpower. She also sees people in the house. This I had a lot of trouble with at first, but trying to be a good mom, I decided the best thing I could do was just say, "I believe you, please tell me what's been going on." And boy, did she. There are so many stories, but here's a couple that have to do with our house. We moved in here when she was 9, and they thought it was weird that things kept falling off shelves even when I put them firmly back and pushed them further back onto the shelf. I also saw a tall man dressed in white walk behind me into the living room, but when I ran after him, there was no one there. My daughter, though, she says there's a tall young man who comes into her room and stands near her closet sometimes. He doesn't bother her, he doesn't want to chat. She normally greets him and then they leave each other alone. There's a little girl who moves her things. My daughter had a picture pinned to her wall with a thumbtack, and the thumbtack kept coming out and would be on her dresser with the picture. One night she got tired of it and tacked it in a new place above her door. Next day, same thing, picture and thumbtack are on the dresser. Sometimes her guests are helpful, though. She's been told by another sensitive friend that there was someone dark and angry in the catwalk area of the theater at their high school. My daughter wanted to go up there and take a look, but I told her it was best if she left those kinds of things alone. She still wasn't convinced, but a couple of days later, she said that a man had come to visit in her room, and it seemed like he had a message for her, but she couldn't hear what he had to say. Eventually, his color turned to red. She said that she felt like he was trying to warn her. So she said, "Are you telling me not to go up to the catwalk at school?" His color cooled to a light green, which is a calm color for her. And she said, "I could just feel that I'd understood what he was warning me about." And he left. She didn't go up to the catwalk. Sometimes she can't find things, and after searching everywhere, she will finally say to her empty room, "I really need that back, please." And pretty soon, her lost item will be somewhere obvious, like on her desk or on her neatly made bed. Another time, she went outside to empty the trash and came back in crying. She'd seen the figure of a man behind her in the mirror of our van. And when she turned around, he was gone. She said, "Mom, he was so, so sad. I want to help him, but I don't think I can." The scariest thing that happened here, though, is that one night my husband and I went out for a drive and to get a drink at Sonic. Do you guys have Sonic? It's just a drive-thru burger joint, but they make something crazy like 50,000 different soda-based drinks. We don't have Sonic here, but I am a fan, so I do know what you speak. Anyhow, we'd left her in charge. The other kids were asleep. She was about 15, and we'd only been gone for 20 minutes or so. When we got back, she had our youngest son, who was about 5 at the time, downstairs. He'd been asleep upstairs on our bed, and she was shaking. She said that her little brother had woken up and was crying, so she went to cuddle him back to sleep. As she approached our open bedroom door, she said there was an evil presence in the doorway, laughing at her. She said, "Mom, I've never been so scared in my life," but she also knew she needed to get to her brother. So she said, "I really didn't want to go in, but I couldn't let him cry in there. So I just ran past, or basically through this thing and into the room. Then I picked him up and brought him downstairs onto the couch." I just stood there in shock, since we'd never really had anything bad happen with our visitors. I told her I was extremely proud of her and that I believed her. She's a really bright and brave girl, even in more typical circumstances. By the next day, she was pretty nonplussed and just said, "It was really scary, but I don't think it's around anymore. It's okay now." And was off again doing her normal teenage stuff. I still don't see what she sees, but sometimes I can feel a presence. One day, I was actually taking a bath, and I could feel someone in the doorway of the bathroom. Brennan. There's no door between the tub area and the bedroom in our master. It's a desert design thing. And it didn't feel positive. I turned off the music I had on and just looked toward it and said, "I can feel you there. If you're here without any ill will, then you can stay. Just leave my family alone. If you mean us any harm at all, then I'm ordering you to leave. You must go." I haven't really felt anything since then. About 10 days ago, I woke up from a nap with a start because I could clearly hear the voice of a child or a young person saying, "Help me, it hurts." And I could feel a pressure on my chest. It scared my husband, who was lying next to me, because I was so freaked out. I thought it was one of our kids, but everyone was safe and accounted for. A few days later, I ran into my neighbor. Our houses were built in the early 1990s, and she's lived in hers since it was first built. I asked her flat out if anything weird had happened in my house. She said, "You haven't heard the story?" I said I hadn't, but told her about what I'd heard in my sleep. She said, "Well, he was about 19 years old, and it was his own darn fault." I asked, "So it wasn't self-inflicted?" She said, "No, it wasn't self-inflicted, but it was his fault that it happened." She asked if I wanted to know the story, and I suddenly felt like, no, I didn't want to know. She said, "Okay, if you ever do, just ask me." Later, I related all of this to my daughter, and I wasn't even halfway through the telling when she shouted, "I see him. He's the one who comes and stands by the closet. He doesn't interact with her, though, so we figure he's okay." There's lots more than this that goes on with my daughter, but I've gone on way too long. Let's just say all of these incidents have made me a hardcore believer out of me. Weirdly, to some, I don't actually see any of this in opposition to my personal spiritual beliefs in God and Christianity. Just like Hamlet said, "There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy." Keep bringing us those stories. It's good to know how many of us there are out there. Okay, so that is a textbook case of a good mom.
100%.
Like, she's not seeing it, but she is 100% open to believing her kid. I love that.
Yeah. And I mean, she clearly does have some sensitivity, but
as you say, is
open to the things that she can't pick up on.
And I think because she is open to it and she has said to her child, "I believe you, you know, don't worry about it. It's all going to be okay. I believe you." She talked about how her daughter went through that scary experience with her little brother. And the next day she's like, "Ah, it's all right. You know, he's not here anymore. Everything's fine," and went on with her day. Where if this girl had been forced to internalize that or deny it or pretend it didn't happen or deal with parents who didn't believe her, ugh, I can't imagine the internal damage that would cause.
Oh, absolutely. And I really think it's a hell of a thing that she was able to do that, to push through it and still go to her brother. Like, that speaks to a huge amount to her character.
Absolutely. 100%.
Because that is scary shit, man.
Yeah. No, it's a great story. And thank you so much for sharing that, because I think there are other people out there who need to hear it, you know, like other moms or even other kids.
Oh, yeah. It just sounds like there's so much going on there. Like, almost like the house sits at a kind of nexus point or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or like a pass through. Because I was thinking about this young boy, you know, whatever she, you know, the neighbor says, well, you know, he kind of had it coming sort of thing, which is kind of a dark thing to say, but okay.
Yeah.
But I was just thinking that, you know, we've seen before, and you know, there's a really great story about a house here in Victoria, which I won't get into now, but it seems like if you're there and you are mentally unwell to begin with,
mm-hmm.
it kind of makes it worse.
Mm.
It's almost like, and you know, I've been told the place itself is maybe not malevolent, although I got to say I haven't been to that area in a very long time because I feel very uncomfortable there.
Right.
But still, I mean, whatever is there seems to have a really profound effect on people who live there with mental illness.
And interesting.
I'm wondering if whatever happened to this young man, if it was exacerbated by the conditions that were already there.
Yeah, I could see that.
Like his mental health.
Yep.
But no, that is so fascinating.
No, it was really cool.
Yeah. There's so much there. I do want to say I am well aware of what Sonic is. Sadly, we do not, as Ethan said, we do not have them.
No.
But whenever I'm in America, I make sure to go to one because my friend Mike, who is a patron of ours, he and I have done several road trips across the U.S. at various points throughout the years. And one constant is that we have both come very close, I think, to giving ourselves diabetes with the 40-ounce. I think it's 40-ounce.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
I'm might be 20, but I think it's 40.
Oh, my God.
It's
I'm
huge.
Googling. I'm going to Google that right now.
Okay. I'll wax full poetic about this while you're doing that. But it's a monstrous Slurpee. So it's like ice and syrup and, you know, those Nerds candy?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So they just upend a bunch of that shit in there.
Oh,
so it's a giant slushy with candy in it, and it is the greatest thing I have ever, ever encountered in all of my travels.
Okay, you ready for this?
Go for it.
The big slushy, 44 ounces.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, my God.
44 ounces of pure freedom, baby. I have talked to God through one of those things.
I bet you have.
Possibly because I've shortened my lifespan.
I was going to say you came very close to meeting him.
Worth it.
Oh,
worth it 1,000 times over.
God. And they give free refills.
Do they?
Yeah.
Okay, that I didn't know. Usually we just buy it and go.
No,
it's... But I remember the last time I was at a Sonic was in Minneapolis. It was just northwest of Minneapolis in 2017 when I was there for a friend's wedding. And
right.
Mike and I were there together. And so we drove up to this tiny little nowhere town because it was the furthest Sonic and we wanted to drive. And just sat in the car watching the world go by, whatever world passes in like rural Minnesota.
Yeah.
And drinking these Sonic Slurpees. And it was a good day.
That's awesome.
And the other thing that I wanted to touch on, I didn't realize this at all, but apparently I have synesthesia.
Oh.
Yeah, I did not understand what that was.
Oh, you know, okay.
Like, I always thought synesthesia was you actually, like, physically see colors.
Right.
I didn't understand that is actually, it's also when you, like, think, when you think associate colors with things. Like, when I hear music, I can perceive music in color in my mind.
Okay, okay.
So I can describe a song as like blue or red or like if you listen to the Beach Boys Pet Sounds album, there is a very, very specific color to it, particularly Sloop John B. And it is a sound that I associate with the very, very razor edge of mental illness.
Wow.
It's this kind of like almost like sickly sunset golden color.
Yeah.
And it's just a little too bright. It's just a little too golden. And again, I because I know Brian Wilson was very heavily involved in the production of those albums, and he was, you know, he has all his life struggled with mental illness, and I believe he was teetering on the brink during those sessions.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And so I've always come to associate that color when I hear it in music with borderline mental illness. So, Martha, which is not her real name, but still, like, thank you for clearing that up for me. Because, I just thought that was a thing everyone could do in the way everyone saw perceived music.
No, only weirdos.
Well, apparently. Our last story tonight comes from Clara. I've always been an imaginative kid, always playing some kind of make-believe game. I think I must have been around the age of 11 or 12 when I became interested in meditation and all the things you could do with your mind. Partially thanks to my mom, who has been using meditation to deal with stress for years and told me about it sometimes. We had some CDs with guided meditations at home, so I started from there, learning how to relax my body so that I could travel anywhere I could imagine. From that time on, I spent almost every night in that state. It was like a game to me, exploring limits of what I could make myself see or experience. Things changed when I was around 16. I don't actually know what had caused this, but I would guess that I simply must have ventured too far without realizing it and brought something back with me, or at least opened a door of some sort. One night I remember waking up all of a sudden. Everything was dark, but when I looked to my right, there was a figure standing next to my bed. Now I know you guys talk about shadow people a lot, but I don't think this was like that. It didn't look like a shadow. It was a full person standing in my darkened room, not doing anything. I could see them clear as day, only their face was covered. Then, as I was ready to start screaming, it was as if I woke up again, like a dream within a dream. Everything looked the same, but the person was gone. This exact scenario happened multiple times during that year, but I don't think it was the same person. It seemed like someone different each time. Always only one person, but wearing different dark clothes, with something covering their face so I couldn't see it. Even though they never actually did anything, I did not appreciate their visits, as infrequent as they might have been. I was terrified, but believed it was just a reoccurring nightmare. What finally did it for me, however, was when I woke up in a cold sweat after one of these nightmares and remembered something. An encounter which, at that point, I had long forgotten about. I must have been 6 or 7 years old. I remember because I was still sleeping on the top bunk in our old apartment. I woke up one morning, it was already light outside, and I felt someone's weight on my pillow, as if they were kneeling behind my head, their back to the wall. Naturally, I freaked out, but somehow I instinctively knew that whoever it was, I could not look into their face or something terrible would happen. Then this woman started talking to me, telling me to open my eyes and look at her. I was terrified and covered my eyes with my hands. As if that wasn't enough, she grabbed my wrists, trying to pry them off of my face, all while telling me to look at her and laughing. Looking back, the creepiest thing about the whole situation is that it felt as if she was just playing with me. She was clearly strong enough to pin me down. She just chose not to. I think it was very funny to her. After a short struggle, I managed to squirm out of her grasp, trying to get away from her. If anyone ever tells you that bunk beds are a good idea, they are wrong. The time it took me to get to the other side of my bed and climb down the wooden ladder before I could run to get to my parents were the longest few seconds of my life. Even though she seemed aggressive at first, she never moved from her position and basically let me go. I didn't look at her, but out of the corner of my eye, I caught a glimpse of a woman in white clothes. I think a dress. Her face was not covered. She just sat there, watched me go, and laughed. As I was almost at the door, she told me something that haunts me to this day. I don't remember her words exactly, but it was something along the lines of, "You'll have to look at me eventually." Or, "One day, you'll have to look at me." The rest is kind of hazy. I think I got my parents, and when we returned, no one was there. After I remembered that at 16 and connected this experience with my nightly visitors, I swore I would never dive into my subconscious like that again. I put up all the walls I could think of and never went back. No more people in my room since then. If there is a moral to my story, I think it is, don't be careless and never buy your kids a bunk bed. Love and well wishes from the Czech Republic. We'll be right back.
Hey, how does Bigfoot tell time?
I don't know how.
He checks his Sasquatch.
I'm Jerry.
And I'm Lacey, and we're the hosts of the Hardly Paranormal podcast, where every week we examine cases of the strange and unusual and try to find out what's really going on.
Is the Black Monk of Pontefract just a trick of the eye?
Could the Loveland Frogman just be a deformed iguana?
What about Will-o'-the-Wisps?
Poltergeists.
Leprechauns?
Gateways to Hell?
We examine them all and more, and discuss if they're real or if they're hardly paranormal.
Catch us every week wherever podcasts are available.
And remember, it's probably just the wind.
What do ghosts wear to formal events? Boo ties!
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly.
Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome back. Thanks as always to the rest of the team, Luke Greensmith, Anthony Germain, and Sarah Kent for their work on this and every episode. Couldn't do it without you guys. We mean that. We're not just saying it. All right, first up, we have our patron shoutouts. Of course, we'd like to thank all our patrons. You guys are the engine which drives this beast, and we don't know what we'd do without you. So, of course, we'd like to thank all our patrons, but we'd especially like to thank our newest patrons. They are
Nadia,
Carly Wilson,
Nancy Austin,
Ryan Challen,
Generic Jackal,
Fat Rat Lover,
Nikki G,
Eric Menard,
Eva J. Weir,
and Paul Rowlands. Thank you so, so much for your contributions, guys. Again, it just means the world to us. It provides us some security in an uncertain time. Again, me especially, because I draw a salary from the show, and it makes life a lot easier. I don't mind telling you.
Mm-hmm.
I have to drive Courier a little less often, which is nice. And so thank you so, so much. And if you want to join the team, head on over to patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. That's patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. We have tiers at the $1, $5, $10, $20, and $50 levels, and you get all kinds of cool stuff, from physical rewards like exclusive stickers, art cards of Nine Night Photography. You also get access to Ian's smash hit Christian country album, Aware of Wonder.
It's more of a threat than a gift.
Well, yeah, either way, you still get it. It's inevitable, you know? Like Ethan Smith. You also get access to bonus episodes. And I know we've had some people get in touch saying they've listened to the whole back catalog and they can't wait for a new show. Well, one way to get a ton of new stuff is to subscribe. And we've been putting out either Cabin Fever or whatever we used to call it before that, water cooler episodes for months now. There's probably 10 hours, 10, 12 hours, if not more, of material backed up. And then there's things like the live show and so, so much more. So if you head on over to patreon.com/ghost3guys, you'll find all that information. Just know we appreciate it. And if you don't want to become a monthly subscriber, but you want to make a one-time donation via PayPal, you can do that too. You can do that either by sending it to ghoststoryguys@gmail.com or by going to paypal.me/ghoststoryguys and submitting it there. And we'll also give you a shout out on the show for that. Next up, we have listener mail.
Our courteous and efficient staff is on call 24 hours a day to serve all your supernatural elimination needs.
We're ready to believe you.
First off, we want to thank everyone who reaches out to us with your comments, your questions, your gentle criticisms. We appreciate it all. Send it to ghostoryguys@gmail.com. Of course, if you have any paranormal stories you want to share with us, either for our edification or so we can share it on the show, it's up to you. ghostoryguys@gmail.com. And we have a pretty great selection of messages.
Mm-hmm.
Around. Of course, what we do is we just sample some of the stuff that comes in. We don't have room for all of it, but we try and pick out some cool stuff among all the cool stuff we get and share it with you guys and answer some questions. So, Ian, you want to take this first one here?
Sure. Steve sent us a message that may well convince me fate is real.
Yes, I fucking love this.
Yeah. My name is Steven, but everyone calls me Steve. I recently changed jobs and now work as an admin officer in a laboratory that carries out food safety testing on, you guessed it, dairy products. I've gotten a bit of a rep among my friends and family as the cheese guy or the free cheese fella. As an aside, I love red t-shirts, and more than half of all my t-shirts are red. I was out walking the dog, a Siberian husky named Finbar Furry, listening to my favorite podcast when I heard I can have my very own red Steve the Cheese Demon t-shirt. Well, naturally, I just had to have one. As I write this, it's winging its way here to the home of the Ballanty Banshee, Limerick, Ireland. And when my friends see it, they are going to flip out. So thank you, Steve, the actual cheese demon.
That
nice
is
of
so
you to write
cool.
in.
Oh, man.
Who knew he was Irish?
Go figure, right? I just about died of happiness when I saw that email.
That is fantastic.
Oh, it's like Steve the Cheese Demon was designed by the U.S. artist Matt Swan. Matt, I can't remember where you're from. But Matt, I don't know what you were channeling or what we were all channeling collectively, but we found Steve. So
I remember coming up with it, but I don't remember why.
Nope, me either. It's like most of the jokes on the show. I just
know.
Don't remember where they come from.
They go, we just don't even notice, but everyone else does.
Literally, the only one I can remember right now is the black dog laughs at midnight. Yep, that's all I remember. This is my life.
And now you're up with Rebecca.
Rebecca says, Ian, I went on one of your ghost walks in October 2018. I was wondering if your route has changed or if you have changed up the stories a bit. Not sure if I would even remember the stories you did. You said only online sales with a max of 10 people. You do the walks on Thursday. Should I book a specific time? And well, that's all you, man.
I can totally answer that. So I just got my schedule for August. And yes, I'm still only on Thursdays. I'm not going to be around the weekend of the 20th in there. I don't know the exact date. Otherwise, you will see me every Thursday night, 7:30 and 9:30. It depends on what night you went, Rebecca. If you went on a 7:30 tour, we do a different one every day of the week, but the 9:30 tour is always the same. So you'd probably want to go on a 7:30. Secondly, yes, you do need to book online. Discoverthepass.ca will take you to the ticket reservations and you can book them there. And that, unfortunately, right now, due to turducken, is the only way to do that. And what else was the other thing? Should I book a specific time? I would. 7:30 is probably what you want if you've already heard the 9:30 tour. So yeah, I hope we see you. I still appreciate your stories and your pie you sent us.
Yeah, that was a great pie. Thank you so much for that.
Oh, I should say I'm on keto now, Rebecca, so don't bring another pie.
Bring a pie.
Don't bring the pie. Jen says she's been listening since the Wendigo episode, episode 4, and she appreciates that we're genuine without being problematic. She only says
that because I edit the episodes.
That is true. If you heard the outtakes, Jen, you'd probably try and arrest us. She said, it's refreshing to know that I can listen without fear of stumbling into some casual bullshit, you know? So we try. She goes on to say that she's had a difficult year, losing her cat, uncle, and grandmother since September. Her grandmother was especially difficult, as because of tofucking lockdown on nursing facilities, which she says is the vegan version of turducken, she wasn't able to see her before she passed. And she thanked us for calling out grief in a blunt but respectful way.
Thank you for saying that. It's nice to know that because, as we said before, we like to talk about the stuff that's on our mind. And I'd say been close to death a number of times in our lives, mm-hmm. like maybe not physically, although I think both of us have been there,
mm-hmm.
but just in terms of losing people.
Yeah.
You know, I've mentioned that my family was quite, not quite, but they're older, you know, they, especially my father's side.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of them passed when I was young and I got very comfortable with that. And it's important, you know, you got to talk about the shit and why not? The thing is, too, I mean, we're human and we're, you know, we're dipshits. We're not stupid guys, but, you know, we still say dumb shit sometimes. And if we do say something that you think is callous or you know, problematic, whatever, let us know. And we may not agree with you, or it may be that, as has happened, people have interpreted things in perhaps a less charitable way than we meant them.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
But again, if that happens, well, we'll talk about it. You know, we're open to that. I mean, mm-hmm. I said something on Instagram a little while ago on our fantastic Instagram account, The Ghost Story Guys. And I made a comment in reference to, I referred to something as my spirit animal.
Right.
You know, it's just an offhand comment. And someone made a great point. They said, you know, that's part of someone's religion. It's not just a flip remark you make.
Right.
And they were cool about it. You know, they didn't come at me hard, but they said it and I appreciated it.
Yeah.
And I changed the caption, you know, because sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes you just say stuff, right? Like things become so ingrained, you don't even think about it. And I'm mm-hmm. pretty good at interrogating my beliefs and my bias, but yeah, sometimes you miss shit. And yeah, so it's absolutely. Helpful when someone says, hey, dude, don't do that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, yeah. And again, we don't agree with everyone.
Nope.
But, we'll definitely assess it honestly. And mm-hmm. if we feel like, yeah, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. we're on board, then yeah, shit, we'll change mm-hmm. it.
Absolutely.
Not just handsome, we're flexible too.
But not like that flexible. Yeah.
No. Not
if
really.
You know what I mean.
Which I didn't.
You're up.
Carol wanted to know if there's any way to get the monthly Patreon goodies by prepaying a year in advance because she doesn't want to have to do the like the monthly payments thing. And unfortunately, there isn't. I've already emailed Carol back, but I thought this would be a useful thing in case anyone else wants to know. I mean, you can send us a one-time payment via PayPal, as I've mentioned, to either ghostoryguys@gmail.com or via paypal.me/ghostoryguys. But you won't be able to get access to the Patreon goodies just because mm-hmm. all that stuff is hosted on the Patreon.
Yeah, we don't have any control over that.
Yeah, it's just in the Patreon server and or like sort of on their platform. And to get at it, you just got to go through their channels. And there's really no other way for us to do that. What you can do is you can sign up for a month and then cancel it right away. And then at the end of the month, you won't be charged again, but you'll still have access for that whole month. Once the month switches over, if you want to re-up, you can do that. And I know it's kind of a pain. It's a little bit, you know, a couple extra steps, but at the same time, you know, it's one way to do it without having to worry about recurring charges.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for asking, Carol. You're up.
Oh, I knew that. Deborah says that in June, she downloaded 10 episodes to listen to on the drive up from Iowa. She says she soon noticed that when the show was playing, her cats, who were making the trip with her and her husband, started kicking up a fuss. But when she put the show back on, they calmed down. She says that recently she was listening to episode 89 when her cat, Miss K, who was the complaining cat from their trip, jumped up on the couch and plopped down. When the episode was done, so was Miss K, who got up and left.
And I screwed that up when I wrote that down there. What she had actually said is that when the show wasn't playing, the cats would kick up a fuss. And when she played it,
okay.
The cats would chill out.
I had an effect on animals before with my voice.
Interesting. Well, did I tell you about Stephen Rachel's birds?
Okay, see, that's weird because it was a bird.
No shit.
Seriously, I'm totally serious. I was in a pet shop and there were about 15 different cages of different kinds of birds.
Yeah.
And I start talking to my friend and this one bird, it was a gray bird with a yellow head and there were two of them in the cage. This bird goes crazy. It starts pressing itself up against the bars. Its pupils dilated to pinbricks. It opened its beak and started going. And I'm looking at it going, what the hell? And I stopped talking and I looked and I pointed it at my friend and the bird kind of came back to itself. And then I went, hey, little bird, how are you doing? And he started doing it again.
No way.
So it was absolutely my voice. I don't know if it was the tone or the notes I was hitting. I don't know. But whatever it was like bird Viagra. It was very disturbing.
Well, I remember when Steve and Rachel, who are listeners and friends of the show, they had birds. Mm-hmm. And I remember Rachel mentioning that when the show was playing, specifically when you were talking, the birds would calm down.
That's so weird.
So you are the Birdman.
I don't get it. Don't get it.
Yeah, and now cats, too. We our dominion is growing.
Well, I am Ian of the animals, after all. In my own mind. At least my chickens. Hey, I mean, my chickens believe me.
We got to be legends somewhere.
May as well be the animal kingdom.
Exactly.
Come to me, animal friends.
Finally, Harley asked if we had a mailing address so they can send some physical fan art, and we certainly do. I've replied to them off air, but if anyone else is curious, and I know I mentioned this at the top of the show, our mailing address is the Ghost Story Guys Podcast, Suite 593 at 185-911 Yates Street, Victoria, BC, V8V4Y9. And I'll put that in the show notes as well as also on the Patreon post for this episode, because it's a little bit, you know, I know in Canada we format our addresses a little differently than they do in the US.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but again, that's Ghost Story Guys Podcast, Suite 593, and the street address is number 185-911 Yates Street, Victoria, BC, V8V4Y9. And yeah, if you want to send us anything, send it there. We will get it. I check the mail usually a couple times a week. And before we wrap up mail, I just wanted to mention, I was talking to Kim Moser from Booze and Bourbon, who were our guests on episode... I want to say like episode 62, The Bleak East. But her and Jen are the hosts of Booze and Bourbon, and actually huge congratulations to those guys. They're doing a TV show, which is
so cool.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, are they joining an up and running TV show, or what's the deal?
I'm not sure. I didn't ask. But anyway, she was saying that they were planning to release a doppelganger episode of their show when ours came out.
Oh no.
So we just happened to run in tandem and we just edged them out just a little bit. So I told her that, we're total dicks and we're sorry, but you should totally listen to the doppelganger episode of Booze and Bourbon if it's not out already when it comes out.
That's funny.
And I think that happened on New Orleans too. I think we both released a New Orleans episode very close to each other.
Cause it's not chatting all the time or anything.
No, I know. I wouldn't talk to me either if I was them, so I get it.
Do you think maybe they are just like bugging our computers or something?
They must be very sad if they are. That would be so deleterious to someone's mental health.
Probably in therapy.
Also this. Yeah, deep, deep therapy.
That's awesome.
Speaking of shows we like, I want to congratulate Kevin and Becca from We Need to Talk About Ghosts for releasing their first book.
Mm-hmm.
It is so cool. You can get it on Amazon or Amazon, I guess. And yeah, you can get it physical or Kindle. And it is a collection of listener stories from their show. And my copy just arrived a couple days ago.
Nice.
And So again, congratulations to those guys. And if you're not listening to We Need to Talk About Ghosts or to Booze and Bourbon, you absolutely should. Or to Mysteries and Monsters, which is our good friend Paul Bestel's podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Check them out. Again, they're all fantastic shows and they're great friends of ours. And even if we don't talk to them very much because we're antisocial assholes, we do care. And,
don't feel bad. I don't talk to anybody.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I can't figure out why anyone would want to talk to me. So, yeah. So that's our email. And if you want to get in touch, ghoststoryguys@gmail.com for your comments, your questions, your gentle criticisms, and your stories. Again, we love doing listener story episodes. And so the more stories we get, the more of them we can do. It's fascinating, too, seeing this rich tapestry of paranormal occurrences and these connections, these these threads underneath the surface that eventually come together.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys all help make that possible. So that's how you get in touch. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/ghoststoryguys. We're on Instagram at instagram.com/theghoststoryguys. And we're on Twitter, although we don't use it very much, at ghoststoryguys. And of course, there is one more way to get in touch with us. And that's the ghost line.
There's something strange in your neighborhood. Who are you gonna call? Ghost Line. Call 1-888-588-6920.
Thanks to our listener Amber Pease for her fantastic Ghost Line jingle. Again, that number is 1-888-588-6920. And that's a toll-free number you can call from anywhere in North America. And you can leave your story as one or a series of voicemails. And it doesn't have to be a story. If you just want to leave a comment about the show, feel free to do that too. And if you don't feel like calling, you can always text us a story at 925-553-4789. That's 925-553-4789. That is a U.S. number, just so you know. So if you're texting from outside the U.S., there may be an international texting fee, depending on where you are and your carrier. But you can use that to send us messages, stories, pictures if you want. I know someone sent us a couple of YouTube videos, which I have not watched yet, but I will have a look at, I promise. And I know a couple of weeks ago, someone sent us a really cool piece of creepy artwork from Pennsylvania. So yeah, you can send us whatever you like at 925-553-4789. That's the Ghost Line. As far as news goes, I've got a couple spots coming up. I did 10 minutes on The Capital, which is a Victoria-centric daily news podcast. That should be coming out next week, I think, if not the week after.
Very cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Actually, it was funny because it was supposed to be a 10-minute spot, and then me and the host spent about an hour and 15 minutes on the phone.
Just that's funny.
Talking, yeah. I said to Nikki, I said, it'll just be 10 minutes because we were hoping to watch the new episode of I'll Be Gone in the Dark.
Right.
Which, if you're not watching, you should be.
I'm not, but I read the book.
Okay, well, this is kind of cool because it sort of eulogizes her, too.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, but anyways, I told her, oh, no, it's just going to be 10 minutes. And then again, after about an hour and 20 minutes, I crept into the bedroom and said, so that
wasn't... Sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
Selfish monster.
Well, she knows me well enough to know it was never going to be 10 minutes.
Yeah, good call.
And I've also got a spot coming up at the end of next month on the Finance the Other F Word podcast.
Oh, fun. Which,
yeah, talking about the business of podcasting a little bit. When it does actually come out, I'll promote both of them on our socials, but that's about all I got coming up. If you want to pick up some Ghost Story Guys merch, head on over to our website at ghoststoryguys.com and follow the links to our TeePublic store. If you do buy something, make sure to send us a receipt. We'll send you a couple Ghost Story Guys logo stickers as a thank you. Big thank you to our listener, Ashley Marsha, who sent us an awesome new design, which we have just put up on both our stores. And someone already ordered a hoodie, which is very exciting.
Oh, nice.
So thank you, Ashley. If you want to pick up signed copies of our books, art cards of my night photography, pins, stickers, all that good stuff, head on over to ghoststoryguys.bigcartel.com. Please don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. Helps bump the numbers, get a few more eyes on the show, and we kind of enjoy the ego stroking too. Thank you very much for doing that. Our theme song, Radio, Into the Darkness We Go, is composed and performed by Peter of Pedzonta Music. You can find him online at soundcloud.com/therealpedzontamusic. Our story's theme is The Future Belongs to Them Now by Hexagram. You can find more from them by going to hexagram.bandcamp.com. That's Hexagram with two X's, not three. Or by searching for Hexagram anywhere you stream your music. All other music and sound effects on this show are provided courtesy of Epidemic Sound. If you're looking for PodSafe music or sound effects for your next project, head on over to epidemicsound.com and check them out. I guess that's going to do it.
Mm-hmm. I think we're there.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with another show, and until then...
Into the darkness we go. You took a poll or
they did?
No, I so set you up for that.
Yes, you did. I'm still going to impugn your computer just because I can.
Wow.
So theoretically, you would think it's not hamstrung by bad internet connection, but you would be wrong. People are so weird sometimes.
People are weird. Okay, so far so good.
So far so good. Coming from the direction of Pilot Street.
Okay.
And we say we both heard it, but no fucking idea what it was.
So weird.
Niagara is right there, and Niagara is like a highway.
Yeah, no, for sure.
But yeah, I don't know. I forgot to mention that one. My hands around your throat. What? At nighttime, there's lights in there.
Right.
And, which, with the contrast of the dark, it borders on exhibitionism.
Right. Maybe that's the secret.
As with all technology, you have to threaten it with obsolescence before it cooperates.
Yeah, 8-track player, take that.
Gazes at you balefully from outside the patio door.
In my grandmother's 1978 Grand Marquis.
That's right. Oh, and I'm going to make a slutty plug. I have opened up a Redbubble store to sell prints of some of my photos.
Right.
So, what's that word?
I don't know. What was that?
Did you hear it?
I heard something.
Yeah, that was at your end, not mine.
Oh. I heard something in the headphones. That was it.
Oh, you heard it in the headphones?
Yeah.
I heard it too.
Huh. Fun.
Yeah, that's okay. Oh, boy. Here we go.
Here we go again.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.